Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink, the podcast for anyone questioning their relationship with alcohol or simply wondering what more life might hold. I'm Anna Donaghy, alcohol mindset coach, author and former strategist, and each episode is going to blend lived experience, psychological insight and powerful tools to help you understand your habits and gently rethink your drinking in a way that throws open oodles of possibilities. So whether you're trying to quit, cut down, or you're just plain curious, then you are in the right place. Let's rethink things together and explore what you're really thirsty for. I'm not smart enough. I'm not interesting enough. I'm not successful enough. I'm not fun enough. I'm not enough, full stop. If any one of those has personally landed with you, just even for half a second, then hold on to that feeling, because that's what we're talking about today. I want you to get curious about it and understand it. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink. I'm Anna Donaghy. Today's episode isn't really about alcohol. Well, not at first anyway. It's about something that sits underneath alcohol, underneath most of what we do actually, a kind of operating system, the kind of which we have on our phones or our laptops, installed years ago, running quietly in the background of everything that most of us have never really looked at directly, not just for a second. And we certainly don't update them and fix the bugs like we do on our phones and our devices. No, this one just runs, installed decades ago and never updated. By the end of this episode, I want you to have some insight about what's running on yours. And I want you to understand why, for so many of us, alcohol turns out to be the thing that steps in when that system glitches. So let's get into that right now. Now, there's a model that I come back to again and again, both in my own life and with the people I coach. It's called the Pyramid of Belief. And I first came across it in Dave Gray's book, Liminal Thinking. So full credit here to him and his brilliant book. I can't show you the diagram or put up a slide here, obviously, so I want you to try and picture something with me for a second. Just picture a classic pyramid shape in your mind, like the pyramids of Egypt, if that's the image that helps. A classic pyramid shape, a wide, solid base at the bottom, and then it narrows as it goes up layer by layer, until it comes to a single point at the very, very top. Because that's what we're going to build together now, layer by layer, all right? At the very bottom, the ground that it all sits on, is reality, all of it. Everything that exists, everything that's true, everything that's ever happened. It's so vast that none of us can hold it all. Nobody gets access to the whole thing, not you, not me, not anyone. We're talking about all the stuff that's ever happened, ever, in the world. No one can hold it. No one has access to the whole thing. So what do you get instead? You get your experience of it. From the moment you were born, through your senses, your perceptions, you started taking in a slice of that very vast reality, but just a slice of it, because that's all that any of us can do. And of course, your slice, your experiences, your events, what you sense and what you witness is individual to you. It's your world. And of course, this is vastly different from someone else's world, brought up in a different place, a different time, a different culture, a different society. But that slice, your slice, becomes the base of your personal pyramid. So stack that on the ground of reality and you've got layer one, okay? Your slice of life. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Of everything you experience, how much do you think you actually notice? So your senses are taking something like 11 million bits of information a second, right? That's everything, your eyes, your ears, your skin, everything that's being picked up through your senses. whether you're aware of it or not. But your conscious mind, the part of you that actually notices, that could tell someone what you're paying attention to right now, that only has room for about 40 bits a second. 40 out of 11 million. So stack that on top. Not just a slice of reality, but a slice of a slice, if you like, the tiny fraction you can actually pay attention to and register. And here's the thing your brain does next. Your brain is basically a sense-making machine. It can't just leave that fraction sitting there doing nothing. It has to start making sense of it. And it forms a theory and then a judgment. So let me give you an example. And stay with me, because I'm going to come back to this one in a minute with a story of my own. Say you grow up going through a school system or an educational system that puts a lot of weight on exams, where how you do in those exams gets treated as a measure of what you're capable of. Okay? Out of that, a theory can form that exams are a measure of how smart you are. And if you happen to find those exams hard, a judgment stacks on top of that theory, which is, you know, I find exams hard. Okay, so stack those on next. And then right on the top, the tip of the pyramid, the bit that gets built last but ends up running the whole damn show, is the belief. And in that exam example, it could well be, you know, if exams are a measure of how smart you are and you find those exams hard, your belief could be, I'm not smart enough. Or going back to how we open the episode, it could be experiences that taper to theories and judgments and ultimately beliefs that you're not interesting enough, or you're not fun enough, or you're not confident enough. And that's it. That's the whole structure. A belief that sits on top of a judgment, sitting on top of a theory, on top of attention taken from experiences, sitting on top of a reality that none of us can ever know in the first place. Layer by layer, built without you ever choosing to build it. And it doesn't stop there, because you're not building this thing alone. Along the way, other people have handed you material for your pyramid too. Teachers telling you what your grades mean. The culture you grew up in telling you, often without a single word, what success looks like, what's attractive, what's shameful. Then there's the news telling you what to be afraid of. Your friends telling you in a thousand small ways what's normal, what's acceptable, what isn't. And here's the catch though. Every single one of those sources is doing exactly the same thing you are. They've each got their own pyramid, their own slice of reality, their own 40 bits a second wheedled down for many, many more, their own theories and judgments. And when they hand you information, they're handing you the output of their pyramid, not some neutral, objective truth. So we do the only thing we can do. We decide, mostly without realizing we're deciding, whose pyramid we trust. And we let those trusted sources shape ours even further. Now, none of this is a flaw, by the way. It's not a design fault. We need to simplify an infinitely complex reality down into something we can actually use to get through life. If you experience every single moment as if it were entirely new, no shortcuts, no prior theories, no judgments, no beliefs to lean on, you'd be like a newborn, helpless, paralyzed by complexity, unable to decide what to have for breakfast, let alone how to run an entire life. So the pyramid isn't the enemy. It's necessary. But it's also invisible. And that's the part worth sitting with, because somewhere in yours, sitting quietly at the top, there's an I'm not enough belief. You might have heard these called limiting beliefs before. It's the same idea, basically. Installed years ago, rarely, if ever, updated, running the background of everything you do, the choices you make, the way you see yourself, the things you think you're capable of, the things you think you're not capable of, the things you reach for when life gets hard, or when you just want to feel a bit more like the person you wish you were. We all have one. Our own version of iOS installed in childhood and never, ever updated. I know exactly when a significant part of mine was installed. I was 17 years of age. My brother had just been accepted to Oxford. And with the best of intentions, I guess, my parents encouraged me to sit the Oxbridge entrance exam. I didn't want to. I knew I wasn't prepared and I sat it anyway. Now, I'm not going to wibble on about the whole story here. It's in my book, What Are You Thirsty For? If you want the full version. But the short version is this. I sat in that exam, for about an hour, produced about four supremely inadequate lines. And as the adjudicator collected my paper, he sniggered. And I've never felt shame like it before or since. And that one moment, that single sound got filed away. A theory formed. I'm not up to this. I'm not like my brother. I don't belong in these rooms. And then a judgment, you know, I got it wrong. I failed. And right at the top, settling in indelibly, this belief that I'm not smart enough. The belief had nothing to do with alcohol. It was built years before alcohol became a significant presence in my life, but it sat there, humming quietly in the background and shaping how I worked, how I presented myself, how I measured my own worth for the best part of three bloody decades. And here's why I'm telling you this. It's because I don't think my story is in any way, shape, or form unusual. I think if you go looking, most of us can find our own version of that exam hall, a moment, big or small, where a message landed, you're not enough, in this specific way. And once it lands, it rarely leaves. But here's what I think has changed. And I think this is something to spend a bit of time thinking about. I don't think we talk about it enough, actually. That belief, those kind of beliefs, used to get reinforced occasionally by a comment or a comparison or a bad day. But now it gets reinforced constantly by design. We are living through the most comprehensively engineered comparison machine humans have ever built. Every platform most of us carry around on our phones, in our pockets, is at its core a highlight reel generator, showing you other people's best lit, best angled, best edited moments and asking your brain 40 bits a second at a time to measure your unfiltered days against that. It's not an accident that this makes you feel like you're falling short. Falling short is, in fact, the business model. Attention is the product, and not enoughness is one of the most reliable ways ever discovered to hold it. So it's not just that many of us built an I'm not enough belief once in one exam hall, at one dinner table, in one classroom years ago. It's that the entire modern information environment has become extraordinarily good at finding that belief, wherever it lives in you, and quietly turning the volume back up on it every single day. So where does alcohol come into this? Well, here's what I've come to believe, both from my own experience and from years of conversations with people about this. Alcohol was never really the problem. It was the answer, or at least it was the first thing that stepped in and offered to be the answer. Think about what happens when the belief flares up, when you feel yourself falling short of some standard you never consciously set, when the not enough voice gets loud. You want it to stop, right? And for a huge number of us, alcohol is the fastest, most socially sanctioned, most readily available way to make it stop, even if only for an evening. Not smart enough. Well, a drink can make the room feel less intimidating. Not interesting enough? Well, a drink can make you feel like you finally have something to say. Not funny enough, not relaxed enough, not enough of a natural at parties. Well, a drink can hand you a version of yourself that feels close to who you wish you were, at least for a few hours. I want to be really clear about something here because it really matters. This isn't a story about alcohol being some external villain that tricks you. It's much more interesting and much more useful than that. Alcohol isn't creating the belief, it's answering one that was already there. The tip of your pyramid, quietly sitting there for years. Which means the belief was always the real story. And alcohol just turned out to be a very convincing understudy. And once you can see it that way, the question changes. It stops being, is my drinking bad enough to worry about? And becomes something much more useful, which is, you know, what is my drinking actually trying to answer for me? So here's what I'd like you to do, what I'd like you to take away from this. You can actually do something rather than just nod along, okay? I want you to ask yourself that question. Where do you not feel enough? If you were to be filling in the blanks, I'm not dot, dot, dot enough, I'm not something enough, what would you insert in there? And I want you to notice whatever fills that blank first, right? Just quickly and instinctively before your rational brain has time to sort of tidy it up or talk you out of it. For me, it was smart. I walked around with this thought, I'm not smart enough. But for you, it might be, you're not interesting enough, you're not successful enough, you're not attractive enough, you're not fun enough, you're not lovable enough, or something else entirely. Whatever comes to mind in that first half second, that's very likely the one worth paying attention to. And then a couple of ways to go deeper on this over the next week or so, if you want to. First of all, notice what you reach for when you're depleted, when you're tired or stressed or socially anxious and flat. Not what you reach for on a good day, but what you reach for when the operating system is glitching. That reach is usually pointing straight at a belief underneath it. Second, notice the story that you tell yourself right before a drink feels necessary rather than optional. I need to relax. I need this to be interesting tonight. I need this to get through the evening. That word, need, and whatever follows it is often the belief talking, dressed up as a simple preference. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. Actually pinning down a belief and telling it apart from just a passing thought, differentiating a belief from a thought, is actually harder than it sounds. And it does deserve more than a couple of minutes at the end of this episode. So I'm going to give it its own dedicated space, its own dedicated episode in a couple of weeks' time, a proper toolkit for how to actually find the belief underneath the noise rather than just the thought sitting on top of it. But for now, all I'm asking is that you notice what comes up when you ask that question. That's enough of a start. You can't examine a belief that you've never actually looked at. So yes, if this has landed for you, stick around because over the next few weeks, actually, dotted in between other episodes, I'm going to take some of the most common blanks that people fill in, some of the most common beliefs that they have that can fuel drinking, okay? I'm going to take some of those beliefs and I'm going to examine them one by one. It could be that I need alcohol to be interesting. I need alcohol to feel confident. I need it to belong. I need it to cope. We're going to pull them apart one by one, giving them their own time properly, okay? Your pyramid was built for you, mostly without your permission. Out of a childhood you didn't choose or a culture you didn't design. And an attention span that can only ever catch 40 bits out of 11 million. So none of that is your fault. But now you know it's there, you get to do something that most people never do. You actually get to look at it. You get to look at what's sitting at the top of your pyramid, what's in your blank. Because once you know that, once you know the version of yourself you've been quietly trying to become, evening after evening, drink after drink, You can see what alcohol's really been doing. It was never the thing you wanted. It was always just standing in for that thing. So the real question becomes, what are you actually thirsty for? I'm Anna. This has been the Big Drink Rethink, and I will see you next time. Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. It really helps other people find the show. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find all of my resources and become part of the Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebigdrinkrethink.com.